You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money Markets podcast for this Wednesday, the 26th of November, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, the S&P ASX 200 up 0.8% today. We'll have the details with Damien Bowie from Wilson Asset Management in a few moments' time. And that's despite a rise in consumer prices. The ABS says the annual headline inflation rate rose from 3.6% in September to 3.8% in October. That is above the Reserve Bank's target band of 2 to 3% and is a 16-month high. Even the underlying measure, which strips out one-off moves, hit 3.3%. Annual domestic holiday prices rose as some consumers felt more confident to spend, but many basics like food are also more expensive, especially beef, up 10.5% following overseas demand. That's year on year. Rents up 4.2% annually and electricity surging 37% on the year. So what does this all mean for interest rates and what does it say about the economy? For that and more, I spoke to Belinda Allen. She's the head of Australian economics at the Commonwealth Bank. Belinda, how would you describe the inflationary environment at the moment?
Probably with one word, uncomfortable. Certainly what we've seen in recent months between the quarterly inflation print and the October monthly CPI is inflation pressures remain in the Australian economy. Certainly that's been reflected across a number of different pricing indicators, particularly market services, which the Reserve Bank of Australia pays close attention to. But certainly inflation at the moment and on our forecasts remain above target for several more quarters to come.
You mentioned market services. Where are these price pressures coming from? And is there a concern that some of them are becoming more entrenched?
It's a good question. When we look at the data, and particularly for the September quarter, the majority still seems to be temporary. That's prices for areas like travel, petrol, council rates. We're all temporary in nature. There's certainly some signs that persistent inflation is coming back into force, though. And if we still see a stronger consumer environment from here, which potentially you're seeing in some areas around market services and household goods, then that can certainly lead to more entrenched inflation over coming quarters. And that is something we're certainly keeping an eye out for.
This report is an interesting one because it's the first complete monthly measure from the ABS, replacing basically the quarterly report, although from my understanding, the RBA is still preferring the underlying measure in that quarterly report as a primary headline measure, right? But how differently do you need to interpret this new set of data?
I think we've got to have one eye on the fact that it is a new data series. We are very used to the quarterly inflation print here in Australia, which has a long history. To get a little bit technical here, the trimmed mean estimate, which the Reserve Bank relies on quite heavily, is actually seasonally adjusted, and you need a longer time series to do that accurately. The new monthly CPI print we got today doesn't have that longer time series. So we do have to be aware of that. Some of the numbers do look quite volatile. And as a result, we do expect the Reserve Bank to put some weight on today's release, but would prefer to wait until the full quarterly inflation print for the December quarter, which we get out in late January, to probably get the most accurate read on inflation pressures in the Australian economy.
So I guess that means journalists and economists like you have more numbers to look through, right? More work. But what does it ultimately mean for the Reserve Bank and interest rates as it also tries to manage full employment? Does it raise the risk that that next move in interest rates is up, even if it is some time away?
Look, there's certainly less and less risk of further cuts coming through the Australian economy. We've had our forecast for no change in the cash rate here in Australia for a month now, and that is certainly looking like the right place to be. There's certainly scenarios where you could see the cash rate move higher from here, and it very much comes down to upcoming inflation prints as well as labour market prints. We know inflation already missed the upside in the September quarter. Today's release also showed stronger inflation than was expected. If the next quarterly inflation print is also higher than estimated, and the labour market still looks on solid footings, or the unemployment rate certainly moves lower from here, risks are building that the RBA may need to certainly strike a more hawkish tone or consider rate hikes in the future to really get inflation back under control and moving back towards that 2.5% target. That's a risk, but not our base case.
Okay, that's Belinda Allen there from the Commonwealth Bank. Let's see what the markets think, because the S&P ASX 200 rose by the close, up by about 0.8%, but there was a sell down just as the data was released in the late morning. The index losing around 30 points, but still, as I said, finishing higher by 0.8%. 8,606, 8 of 11 sectors ended higher. Materials, healthcare, consumer discretionary and energy doing best. The best performer on the market today, a company called National Storage. It's a property, it's in the property space, up by about 19%, followed by Mesoblast and Drone Shield. The worst performer on the market today, online furniture retailer Temple and Webster, the market not liking update. Shares smashed today, down by 32%, followed by West African Resources, down by 9.5%. For more on the day's market action, including what it thinks about interest rates, I spoke with Damien Bowie. He's a portfolio strategist at Wilson Asset Management.
The market's proving quite resilient to the rise in bond yields that we've seen on the back of the CPI number. Part of that's due to the fact that in the US, the lead is pretty positive in the futures. But we're also seeing in Japan, for example, there's evidence that they're probably going to hike rates over there, and the Japanese market's going up. So I think for now, although higher bond yields and higher interest rates can be challenging for valuations, the market's taking a glass half full view, which means that, you know, higher rates are actually a sign of good growth. Look for where those opportunities are.
But isn't the market still factoring in the possibility that the Reserve Bank is done cutting interest rates, and there may be consideration that the next move is up, even if it's down the track?
Yeah, so the implication of higher bond yields, I mean, the bond yield now has gone meaningfully, three-year bond yield in particular, has gone meaningfully above the cash rate now. So what the market is saying is that there's not even the prospect of a complete cut priced in. And then whenever the low in interest rates is sometime mid-year, the curve is now pricing in hikes after that. So, you know, if you look through that trajectory, it's saying rates unchanged for a while, but certainly it suggests that the RBA is done cutting.
Now, this is different, as you mentioned, to the US, because there are rate cuts potentially to come there, right?
Yes, that's right. So there's a bit of a data blackout that we've seen because of the shutdown. And in response to the shutdown, officials have basically taken the stance that, look, shutdown can't be good for the economy. So if there's any uncertainty there, we'll probably cut rates in response. So the lead there is Christopher Waller in terms of, you know, Powell is obviously the chair, but the next person in line that they're looking at is Christopher Waller. And he's basically telling us that, you know, he prefers a cut. Williams, another governor, is telling us that he favours a cut. So the market initially came to the view provided by a few of the more hawkish members that maybe there was no December cut in the absence of data, but it looks like now the consensus is starting to build around, no, we will cut.
So given these rate moves, what's the message for investors then?
So the rate moves are basically saying that, look, in Australia, you know, never mind whether you think there are rate hikes, the issue is that rate cuts aren't coming anymore. Which means that you don't get the incremental support to the equity market from valuations from policymaker decisions. In contrast, in the US, you still have some potential for multiple expansion if bond yields can stay low. And on top of that, in the US, you've got a reopening recovery which hasn't really been priced. So I dare say that investors will look at this current divergence between Australian and US interest rates probably as more of a positive for US and global equities than it is for Australia. And in the event that we do start to talk about hikes here, then obviously we have a bit of a handbrake on how well the market and the economy can ultimately do. The bigger picture is that for the RBA, they think that the supply side of the economy can only grow at about 2 and a bit percent, whereas their own indicators are telling you that growth is going to be well above that.
Just finally, can I get your thoughts on the tech sector? There are reports Meta is spending billions of dollars on Google AI chips, supporting parent company Alphabet shares. NVIDIA's CEO basically tweeted as a result, bring on the competition because we have a far superior product, basically. But isn't it highlighting how the top end of the tech sector is where all the deals are being done? So what does this mean for the market and investors, especially in this space?
Yeah, so tech has derated a fair bit in the last little while, and it's derated because obviously a medium-term earnings growth and sustainability concerns. And then, of course, what we've seen is that in terms of announcements, the CapEx plans that these AI companies want to do will now be in excess of what the cash flow that they can internally generate. So there'll be some external funding requirement there. So there's lots and lots of questions about how that's actually going to work. And then you overlay on top of that more of a micro story, which suggests that competition is well and truly alive when it comes to the chip space. So our best guess is that what's happening is a more competitive environment where you have to allow the market to do its thing. So, for example, if the market is basically saying for a company like Oracle, where the cost of funding in debt markets has gone up dramatically, that that's a bit of a no-go, that's not sustainable, then that's the market basically applying a bit of a handbrake to this CapEx growth, which it deems a little bit questionable from a sustainability perspective. But equally, there are winners. For example, if you're a company like Google and you actually are able to come up with a superior product or a more competitive product, then there's room there for earnings upgrades. So what does it all mean for the market, let alone stock selection? Well, there's a few things to actually think about. One is that you will get a market broadening here. So whether it's you don't like AI and you think that the rest of the market can go up, like the Russell 2000 or the remaining stocks, then that's a very interesting way to play it. So non-tech can definitely do well. But what's really interesting is that even within the tech bucket itself, although it's been a bit weak recently, there is also a broadening. It's not just Nvidia now, it's a whole lot of other stocks that could do well. So the overarching message there is that market breadth needs to increase. And if market breadth increases, some of the concerns about the concentration of gains into some very, very large stocks just eases a little bit. The second thing is that, if CapEx growth in AI has to have a bit of a handbrake pulled on it, or it's just not realistic what's been announced, then what you need to do is talk about, well, does that mean the US economy is going into recession because CapEx growth has been such a big driver of growth? There are some people who believe that. But we favor the view that, look, capacity in the American economy is actually quite tight. And presumably the tightness has partly got to do with the fact that so many resources have been diverted towards AI CapEx. So if you apply a bit of rationality there, then potentially you will free up resources to be able to go to other sectors, other areas of CapEx, which will also enable the rebalancing story. So our view is that this is actually quite a healthy little pullback. In CapEx, AI, I should say, to sort out the wheat from the chaff a little bit. And actually, it can be still consistent with the equity market rising. There will inevitably be questions about growth stocks and tech stocks, and they are right to have that. But the rest of the market, there are some really interesting cyclical opportunities.
That is Damien Bowie there from Wilson Asset Management, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you like it, give it a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and click subscribe. And I will see you tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.